The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. And my goodness, we are getting so many tips from you about the mask mandate. A lot of people who are willing to walk away from their jobs. I'm going to talk to a local firefighter who says that he will have to quit because of his religious exemption being declined. And he says because there was some fetal tissue and fetal cell research in the making of these vaccines. So we'll talk to that person. But man, from what I'm hearing from nurses, doctors, cops, firefighters, we are a state that's going to be on the brink of anarchy just over a month from now when Jay Inslee's firing mandate goes into place. But before we get to all of that stuff today, I want to tell you about just an absolutely horrible story we started to share with you a few weeks ago when it was first in the news, and now we have a very important update. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
About 7 weeks ago, the unthinkable happened to a local family, a man named Greg Moore, and I have learned since Greg's passing of how deeply loved this man was and is, because every time I talk about Greg, the response has been just amazing. And this is a man who wanted to be very healthy because he had grandchildren on the way, and he had a wife of 30 years that he loved so very deeply. And Greg was out for an early Sunday morning run. He would go on long runs, 15-mile runs on some weekend days. And sometime around 6 a.m. near Maple Valley, a car hit and knocked Greg into the ditch, and they left him there for dead. And we now have some new developments on this story that take just such a sad story. It also makes it incredibly infuriating. Greg's wife is Michelle Moore. She joins us once again. Michelle, on behalf of all my listeners, our absolute deepest sympathies, thoughts, and prayers go out to you for the way everything is unfolding on this. How are you doing now?
I'm not doing great right now.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. Let's get everybody updated. What we knew last time we talked was that they had a car that was driving in the same area at the time that Greg was running in that area. They were hoping somebody could help identify that car. A couple of days ago, they did not have a suspect in custody, but we found out something that was shocking about the person they were looking for. Tell me when you found out the demographics of the person they were looking for that killed Greg.
The demographics were they were not from this area. They came out from SeaTac in cars that were taken from their families. They were underage drivers, 14 and 15 years old. There were two cars. In the first car, the Toyota Camry that hit him, there was the person that did this, and then there was a passenger, and then there was a Ford Escape behind them who witnessed the whole thing.
But the driver of the car that hit Greg, it was a 15-year-old girl, right?
Mm-hmm.
What in the world goes through your mind when, I mean, I know that this story can't possibly get any worse than it's been for your family the last 7 weeks, but when you hear that it's a 15-year-old girl, what in the world flashes through?
Yeah, initially when I heard it was a 15-year-old girl, I had some empathy. I was once a 15-year-old girl who made some very bad choices myself, and I thought that this was something that she did accidentally and that she panicked. And that was the scenario that seemed the most likely to me.
So then you got some details from the people who witnessed this and from the passengers, and a little bit different picture emerged, didn't it, of what was going through her mind?
Yeah, she did it intentionally. I guess it's something that had been in the back of my mind the whole time, but it was so, you know, unthinkable that I didn't really allow myself to have that thought. But the area in which he got hit was the least likely area that he should have gotten hit on his run. It has an 8-foot shoulder and, you know, visibility for a really, really long ways. Yeah. So I guess in the back of my mind, I always kind of knew it could have been intentional, but when I found out that yes, indeed it was, I don't know that there's any words for that. It's sickening. No. It's grotesque. It has made me lose my faith in humanity, and I can't sleep. And it's almost worse than when I first found out that he had died.
And it was her passenger and the person in the trailing car who confirmed that she swerved in order to hit Greg?
Yes, and there was one other person involved, a family member of hers, a very brave family member of hers who had overheard some conversations that she'd had with the accomplices in this crime, and she was key in bringing all this to light.
Yeah. The people who witnessed this, did they explain what her demeanor was or what in the world was going through this girl's mind when she, I mean, because this is subhuman behavior. This is not something a normal person could possibly do. Did they try to give any idea of what was going through this girl's head?
So I haven't been able to see any actual statements from these individuals yet. I only have been relayed information from the detective. And all I know is these two individuals stated that it was intentional. But the really chilling detail is from the family member that overheard these people talking about the crime and laughing about the way that Greg went up in the air when he was hit.
Yeah, we did hear that news that the impact sent him flying through the air. And also, there's no indication that this girl was under the influence of alcohol or other drugs. Is that right?
Well, they all say they weren't. But it doesn't, you know, I mean, even if they were, it doesn't matter because even if she was high as a kite, she's going to be tried as a minor in a juvenile court, and she's going to get 3 to 6 years.
Yeah, and you're right. 7 weeks later, they have no way to prove what her blood alcohol was. Okay, let's go to that point now. They would have the option of trying her as an adult. She's just a few months shy of her 16th birthday. She took a family vehicle without permission, of course. And when did the prosecutor tell you that they were not going to charge her as an adult?
Today.
And what was your reaction, Michelle?
I'm exhausted. I met with the police yesterday and the victim's advocate for the court, and I asked if I could inform my friends and family to write a letter pleading that she be tried as an adult. And I got so many letters, and I sent them all to the proper place. All the I's were dotted, all the T's were crossed. I did everything I could. My friends and family did everything they could. And then I just had a Zoom with the prosecuting attorneys for the juvenile system. And that's not going to happen. She's going to be tried as a minor, and she's going to get 3 to 6 years.
And did they try to rationalize that as they were telling you this?
They said that she had the intent to hit him, but not necessarily the intent to kill him, which is asinine. And anyone above the age of 8 knows the likelihood of hitting a person, especially a small person. Greg was a small person.
Yeah.
If you hit a small person with a 3,000-pound car, the chances are pretty good that they're going to die.
The witness estimated that they were going about 50 miles an hour. And so the prosecutor is actually trying to say that this girl intended to hit your husband while traveling 50 miles an hour, but that she did not have the intent to kill him?
That's what they're saying.
That's one of the most asinine things I've ever heard.
Yeah, but she's only 15, Dory. She doesn't understand how, you know, these things work.
My Lord. I mean, I've had three girls go past the age of 15 and are young adults now, and we know consequences. Our kids know consequences. This girl knew the consequences.
Well, there are no consequences now. You can be 15 years old and do what you want.
Yeah.
Clearly.
I know that you and Greg are just about to become grandparents for the first time, right?
Yep, in November, and today is our 30th wedding anniversary.
Oh, good Lord. Oh, Michelle. I mean, this is just heartbreaking. And so, while this girl takes away all of that, Greg being a grandpa, mm-hmm. you sharing all of that, this girl's going to be 19, 20 years old, and will get out and be able to live the rest of her life as happy as she can make it.
Oh, yeah, happy as a clam. All of her records are sealed. She can get a job. Everything will be hunky-dory for her. She's got a bright future.
Yeah. Did you talk directly with Dan Satterberg?
I was not able to talk to him. I spoke with the prosecuting attorneys that are on the case that are working in that juvenile court.
I will assure you, I don't know if it'll make any difference, but, I mean, my listeners and I, we will move heaven and earth to try to get through to the prosecutor.
Yeah, I keep thinking it can't get worse, and it gets worse. You know, I lost Greg, and then I found out it was intentional, so then I lost my faith in humanity. And then I find out that they won't try her as an adult. So I've lost my faith in the United States justice system. So I am lost and exhausted.
Yeah, I understand. Who and what do you have to help you emerge from this darkness? From this, I mean, when you say that you are lost, I know that you have family, you have kids, right?
I have a really good support system. I'm actually here with a friend right now and my dog.
Yeah.
And I have, you know, I have my family. Greg's family is my family too. And I have a lot of friends and I have a lot of support. And I am typically a pretty happy person. But after that Zoom conversation today, I'm just having a really rough time. I'll get over it.
Yeah, no, I know. I know you will. And as I said, I will do anything that I can and to mobilize things. But where did you leave it with them? Did they leave the door open a crack for trying her as an adult?
The only way in which they said they would consider trying her as an adult at this point is if new forensic evidence comes through. They have one phone out of the three phones. The other two are probably at the bottom of Angle Lake or something. So they only have one phone, and it is being examined right now. So if there is evidence that she intended to kill him, then they will consider trying her as an adult. But short of that, you know, your listeners could have a parade down, you know, First Avenue and call and email and, you know, take out billboards all over the city. It's not going to do a damn bit of difference. It doesn't matter.
I can only imagine how furious you are, because I am just in a rage hearing this. Last time we talked, before they had a suspect in mind, before they had any clues, you said that you wanted to talk to this person who could hit Greg and leave him for dead. Mm-hmm. Would you still want to talk to this 15-year-old girl? And if so, what would you tell her, Michelle?
I don't even know. I am so, you know, I'm just at a loss for words right now. I would, you know, I don't know. I do also want to talk to that family member. That there's a young family member who really stepped forward and did the right thing. And yes. She's really the hero in the story. And I would like to talk to her. I would like to have a conversation with her for sure.
Well, there are a couple of heroes in this story, and your strength, your advocacy for Greg and for justice, there's nothing short of heroic about that. And I'm just so sorry for what you're going through. I'm sorry that at a time when we were all hoping you'd start to get a little closure, which is an overused word, because I know that you never can close this down, but I know you were hoping to get the information that would ease things a bit, and instead it just has deepened the pain, and I'm disgusted on behalf of citizens for our prosecutor's office right now.
Oh, sorry, my dog barked. Yeah. Thank you. I feel the same. It's a disgusting situation, and I feel abandoned by the legal system and, you know, the wheels of justice. It shouldn't be like this.
Well, Michelle, I will try to get hold of Satterberg.
Thank you, Dory. I appreciate it.
You will be in my prayers, you and your family. God bless you. God bless you. And, you know, I know that there's not a lot of solace available right now, but that grandbaby that's going to be here in a couple of months. I've heard so much about Greg from his friends, and they've contacted me so much about the kind of guy he was, and through you and your children and that little grandbaby, Greg's going to live on through all of these people, and of that I'm certain.
You're right. I just wish I had him here with me.
All right. Yeah. Michelle, God bless you, and we will stay in touch, okay?
Okay. Thank you, Dory.
Michelle Moore, story just absolutely tears me up, just breaks my heart to hear a story like this. So, yes, I can confirm that the King County Prosecutor's Office will talk to us in the next hour, and we'll get their perspective on how a 15-year-old who intentionally swerves, according to the eyewitnesses, intentionally swerved to hit and kill a jogger on a Sunday morning, how she can be facing charges just as a juvenile. So we will talk to the prosecutor's office, live up to our commitment to Michelle Moore, and see why we're not getting more justice on this story. And that is your exclusive Big Lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Oh, we have a lot of other news to get to as we march through the afternoon. Since we did the entire first Big Lead as that interview, we have an altogether additional supplementary bonus Big Lead for you coming up next as we keep rolling here on the Dory Monson Show. And it's not just the streets of Maple Valley. They're so dangerous with smirking 15-year-old girls swerving her car to try to hit and kill an innocent man on a Sunday morning drive. But down in the Pioneer Square, Occidental Park neighborhood, people are wondering if they just need to clear out of there, because once again, we are just letting the criminals take over our region. And yes, this 15-year-old girl, if she's guilty of what she's accused of, she's definitely a criminal who took over the streets early on a Sunday morning to kill. Down in Pioneer Square, Occidental Park, there's a guy named Alex Drummond, and he just took his two dogs out for a walk a couple of days ago. And all of a sudden, one of the drug vagrants, presumably, who was down there owning a pit bull And that is such a problem. I was walking through there a couple weeks ago. I went to a Mariner game. I got there a little bit early, so I was able to walk around Pioneer Square just so I could see the things that I'm reporting on every single day on this show. And there are so many homeless vagrants who have pit bulls down there. And these bully dogs, if well trained, I think they can be very cool dogs, but they also have a bite strength that'll kill another dog that can, you know, chomp into the leg of a human being. And I found it to be pretty frightening, pretty intimidating how many of these pit bulls are roaming around Pioneer Square. So this guy's name is Alex Drummond. And he wanted to just go for a walk with his dogs. And now for the first time after this incident, he needs to know, should he have to carry a gun just to take his dogs for a walk?
What's the next step? Do I carry a baseball bat with me? Do I go and buy a gun to try and keep myself safe from walking my dogs?
Talk to Cairo 7 about what happened to him.
When I heard all the commotion, I just saw the pit bull come racing past the tree towards us. And like slam into my dogs here. I was able to grab it by the collar and like yank it off. At which point the dog's owner had come over and was then started spouting abuse and threatening me.
Yeah, instead of trying to just corral his dog and using 100% of his energy to pull his dog in, the dog owner started screaming at the man who was being attacked, and his dogs were being attacked by this guy. And this guy you just heard from, Alex Drummond, he was able to grab the collar of the pit bull and yank it off. And then that's when he got all kinds of abuse from the homeless man who apparently owned that pit bull.
Right now.
He says the pit bull's owner is this man shouting at Seattle police. A second man joined the fray, he says, and punched him. He says he used pepper spray to fight off both men. But the pit bull's owner, identified in court as Dominique Deshaun Jones, came after him with a knife.
Okay, so this guy's trying to fight off the pit bull, and the pit bull's owner comes after the innocent guy with a knife. And I've seen the visuals. Cairo 7 has the visuals. But the owner of the pit bull, allegedly, cut this man's face from the corner of his mouth all the way across to his ear. It is a horrific-looking injury. And Alex couldn't believe what was happening. He's trying to fight off the dog. Then he's trying to fight off a maniac with a knife.
And when he lunged, he managed to catch all down the side of my face. Turns out he managed to cut an artery in my face.
And this ties in with what we were talking about yesterday, when the King County or the Seattle City Council said, yeah, let's not fund more police officers. Let's get more community people out on the streets. Yeah, they're going to do a fine job holding off a pit bull that's being controlled by a knife-wielding attacker. But that's literally what they're saying, that Seattle police are down about 300 cops versus last year. Last year, when I did the mid-year study, Seattle had fewer police officers than at any time in our city's history on a per capita basis. So even compared to 1910s, we had more cops per capita than we have in 2021. And when you have a vacuum of law enforcement like that, the criminals take over. And that's what's happening. The people who are victims, they're the ones who say, council, you have to do something.
I want Seattle City Council to see this. I want them to hear it and stop putting out little sound bites where they're like, we need to get this taken care of ASAP. I was like, ASAP is too late. We need to get it done yesterday.
And unbelievably, Andrew Lewis, the Seattle City Councilman, who all of his constituents tell me he is the most ineffective, out of touch, couldn't care less congressman that they've ever seen. And we've played you lots of sound bites from Andrew Lewis. But I tell you what, when one of these stories pops up, like a dog attack and a knife attack in his district, man, the most dangerous place in the world would be to get between Andrew Lewis and a television camera, because he wants to just pop right in front of the camera. look really adorable and talk about all the things that he is doing to save the city. And there he had it. I mean, a pit bull couldn't have kept Andrew Lewis away from a television camera as this story was being reported. And Andrew Lewis, sure enough, he went in front of Cairo 7 and he said, oh, no, this isn't our fault. This is the mayor's problem.
Well, under the charter, the council sets the budget priorities and we provide oversight. But we don't actually execute services. The mayor executes services.
No, but you execute the budget and you've slashed the police budget. And so, yes, you very much have a lot to do with this. And I want you to think about this because do you remember a couple of weeks ago, I led the show when there was an RV fire on East Queen Anne, right on Aurora Avenue southbound before the tunnel. And Andrew Lewis, TV camera, but he couldn't get over there fast enough. Needed a little more FaceTime. But Andrew Lewis went running in front of the TV cameras then, and he said, oh, this is horrible. There's drugs in an abandoned motel, and we've got to clean it up. And if the owner won't, then the city of Seattle might have to take it over.
They have an obligation as a property owner to secure the property and keep it secured and not let it fall into being used in ways that have a detrimental impact on public safety.
So he says the city of Seattle should take over private property if it's not secured and not being used safely. And yet all of these other incidents, Pioneer Square, Occidental Park, City Hall Park, is City of Seattle property that they have not secured and that is not being used safely. It just shows how completely out of touch this guy is.
If a property owner can't responsibly manage their property, I think the city has an obligation to step in and to acquire it and then put the property to a public purpose. And that is, we can do that by legislation at the city council.
So they're going to take over property so that they can do what? Have drug vagrants with pit bulls take it over and put that elsewhere in the city? Because you've done a bang-up job down in the Pioneer Square neighborhood, Councilman Lewis. These are all people. They don't care about doing their job. They don't care about helping people. They care about getting their face in front of a camera because he's young enough. He thinks that maybe he could be a mayor someday, or maybe he could be a higher state office, governor maybe president. I truly think some of these guys are so delusional that they ignore every problem, but get right in front of a camera. Because they think, oh, they could be president someday. Oh, I hope you bring your special kind of Seattle magic nationwide, Andrew. That would be sweet for all of us. Okay, let me take a quick time out here. We've got lots of other news to get to as the Dory Monson Show rolls. Oh, by the way, we will talk to the prosecutor's office next hour about why the 15-year-old alleged killer is not being tried as an adult. We will hear from them next hour on the Dory Monson Show. And I tell you, we have firefighters who say they're going to leave the job a month from now. School teachers are going to have to leave the job. If you haven't gotten your first dose, it's too late to get your second dose before the deadline if you're going for Moderna or Pfizer. I'm just hearing so many absolutely infuriating, ridiculous stories. And plus, what are we doing to our kids? I have to ask this again. Because a dad wrote out to me, and we're going to have him on tomorrow, this dad. But he said, this is insane. Whatever happened to actual science-based decisions? Can you provide the data driving these absolutely insane policies? Please send the data or the studies to me so I can review as well. And this is what he asked of the school district. He said, I'm extremely concerned for my daughter's health and well-being, not only physical, but emotional and mental health. You seriously expect kids to eat lunch with a mask on? And that is what many schools are doing now. Kids must wear a mask while they're eating lunch. He goes on to write, how is it that my kids who attend a private school can go all day without a mask all of last year? And this year, so far, zero serious outbreaks. Why the double standard? This is literally child abuse. When do I need to get in touch, or who do I need to get in touch with to legitimately challenge this and get actual answers based on logic, reason, and medical science? I also know I'm not the only parent who's concerned, and I'd like to lead the effort to fight for logical and science-based policies. Not sure if you knew this or not, but according to the CDC data, yes, actual data from the CDC, reference the table at the bottom of the page, and then he linked to it, kids under 12 are statistically far less likely to contract, spread, or be hospitalized from COVID-19. So then in the school policies that were sent out to this dad and to all the families, they explained to teach your kid how to eat lunch. You have to make sure that the kid has a mask that meets basic requirements. Bandanas do not provide adequate protection. Neither do 99% of the masks they wear, but let's just ignore that. Yes, children should wear masks during lunch. They can lower the mask to take a bite or a drink and then raise the mask to chew, swallow, or talk. Our cafeteria has a fantastic airflow system, and children are spaced apart, and when over 100 of them are in one large room, the cafeteria and gym combined, we need to treat lunchtime as a dangerous time for all. Children need to continue to wear their masks during lunch. So they have this memo. Kids got the mask on, sandwich in hand. They can pull the mask just barely below the mouth, take one little bite, and then they have to pull the mask up right away so they can continue eating the sandwich with the mask on. And same thing, they want a drink of something, just pull the mask down, take a little sip. Before you swallow, move the mask back up. Because, of course, they're afraid that when you swallow, you might have a little exhalation, and then you become a super spreader. So, yes, the schools are actually telling the children that, you know, on the airplanes, they say, yeah, keep your mask on unless you're eating or drinking. So everybody lowers their mask for 10 minutes of freedom so you can eat a little snack, so you can eat the almonds that they give you or whatever it is. But not in school. It's not, yeah, take it down while you're having lunch. It's take it down, but only long enough to get a bite of food or a sip of beverage, and then pull it back up to swallow the food or beverage. We are indeed turning our kids insane. And I've said this before, I will say it again. I believe that 30, 50, 80 years from now, historians will look back at this time in history as a time when the United States of America and the world went insane and drove our kids insane as well. Love to hear your thoughts. Text me 98973. That's 98973. Fast 15 coming up next.